When a congregation takes on a new senior clergyman, it expresses a view of itself and a concept of leadership, not to mention a sense of what religion is all about. Different faiths and denominations hire their clergy in different ways. In conservative Judaism, it is a congregational choice, overseen by a national commission in New York. Journalist Stephen Fried followed that process at one Philadelphia synagogue, where the road from one senior rabbi to the next was anything but smooth. He tells the story in his book, The New Rabbi. Stephen Fried, first the specifics, the congregation and the rabbi who retired from its pulpit.
Harzine is a large suburban congregation of about 1,400 families, quite wealthy, a lot of powerful big machers, as they call them. And the rabbi who retired is named Gerald Wolpe, a brilliant sermonizer and a sort of synagogue politician who had been at the pulpit for 30 years.
Why did they find it so difficult to fill his shoes?
It's very common, not just in conservative Judaism, in all Judaism, and I think in all religions, when you have to replace a clergyman who's been in the position for 10, 20, 30 years, you're talking about not just replacing a man, but changing generations within the house of worship. So many, many issues come up that are beyond the issue of replacing the clergyman. But of course, they're not the same kinds of people who are going into the clergy today. And my generation, I'm 44, are a lot more demanding, more consumer-oriented about what they're looking for in clergy than our parents were, who were a little bit more in awe of their clergy just as they were of their doctors and everybody else.
Yeah, you make the observation in the book that the rabbi used to be more knowledgeable about everything and better educated than nearly everybody in his congregation. That's not true anymore.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. They used to joke that the best rabbi sermonized from the New York Times based on the idea that they had large immigrant communities who were first-generation entrepreneurs and were not necessarily reading the New York Times. One rabbi joked to me, today, you know, many people in my congregation work for the New York Times or read the New York Times, so I can't go there. So yes, you have many people in congregations who have master's degrees, PhDs, and that changes the dynamic. So the rabbi tends to be very more knowledgeable about religious issues. The next generation of rabbis may be only learned in Judaism.
I came away from your book very struck by the demands on a rabbi, and I suppose on other clergymen. They're expected to be scholarly and magisterial, but compassionate with a great bedside manner, good with kids and senior citizens. And you write at one point, a new rabbi is expected to have all the wisdom of the old rabbi, plus all of the energy that he expended acquiring that wisdom.
Yeah, I think people in congregations have no idea how much demand they put on their clergy, because they only see it in terms of what they personally ask for. And you can't imagine, I mean, sitting as I did as a journalist watching the rabbi work, to see just the sheer number of funerals of people coming to them with the best or worst things that have happened in their lives. It's amazing that they can deal with it. Plus the internal pressures, even though the rabbi doesn't run a house of worship, the rabbi's like the leader in some way, but he can be fired. He's a guy who's hired who can be fired.
At the beginning of this book, you have a scene which made me wonder what it's like to be a rabbi, of Gerald Wolpe conducting a bat mitzvah. Girl has turned 13 years old. And a big, powerful, rich, and splintered family carrying on very untowardly. It just seems an extraordinary moment for a rabbi to deal with.
It was, and it was an extraordinary moment journalistically, too. Basically, what happened was this young girl kind of dissed her mother from the Bima during her revered rabbi speech.
That's the pulpit.
From the pulpit. And basically, the mother got up and walked out, and her family got up and walked out with her. And they came back later, and it was a very difficult day. And afterwards, Rabbi Wolpe was very open with me in talking both about the difficulty of this family, but it was quite fascinating to me, just the difficulty of being in the clergy and dealing with splintered families. Because these families, they're splintered. Some of them haven't spoken to each other in years, but when they come into the house of worship for a rite of passage like a bat mitzvah, they want everything to be sort of normal, but it's not. And the negotiations that went on behind the scenes in this bat mitzvah really were quite emotional and sometimes very painful.
The job ultimately went to the young assistant rabbi. And that was a very controversial decision because it violated national guidelines on who's eligible to apply for such a job.
Yes, and the conservative rabbinate, they have what they don't like to call a union, but it is a union. And the rules are that you can't be the rabbi of a very large congregation unless you've had 10 years experience or 6 years experience in that particular congregation. And usually what you want is to have experience at a smaller congregation so you could figure out what it is like to be a pulpit rabbi with, say, 200 families. then 500 families. Then you work your way up, because once you're at 1,400 families, a lot of your life is damage control, just because of the sheer volume of people who need your attention and the sheer number of people you have to impress when you sermonize. So the rules are there to protect the rabbis as much as the congregations. But when push comes to shove, people want what they want. And in this case, they had actually, part of the drama was they chose a rabbi. At the very last minute, he pulled out. And then they were left to try to figure out what to do. And then they spent another 2 years trying to figure out what to do, eventually elevating their assistant rabbi, who they had some problems with, but they also had, at that point, problems with the process. They needed to put a new rabbi in place. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to replace a longtime rabbi. And many times people don't do it all that well.
If in the end the selection of Jacob Herber, the assistant rabbi, as the rabbi, reflects something about Congregation Har Zion, what does it say about them?
Well, since they're still sort of tussling over whether they made the right decision, I would say that right now it reflects their confusion and the difficulty of making this kind of decision. So I think that it's going to be 5 years before you can really answer that question.
There's a great moment, though, when Jacob Herber, the assistant rabbi, has control on an interim basis. He hasn't yet been chosen for anything. An interim basis. And he has a policy decision to make about the wearing of the kippah, the wearing of the yarmulke in the synagogue.
Yes, it might seem like a small thing, which is he was raising the point about whether people should men should cover their heads all the time when they're in the synagogue or just when they're in the main sanctuary. But the issue really had to do with him trying to create his own sort of synagogue for himself. And it's part of what's interesting here is watching a young rabbi trying to develop as an executive, trying to figure out what decisions he can make to make a presence in the synagogue himself when he's in the shadow of this rabbi who's been there for 30 years. So he makes this his first stand, that all men are going to have their heads covered. And A.M. Rosenthal comes in to speak. It's the first big event at the synagogue.
The former editor of the New York Times.
Former editor of the New York Times. And they insist that people cover their heads. And this is, for Rabbi Herber, a big victory, because it means that he has, at a secular event in the congregation, had all the men cover their heads. And these decisions, look, these decisions about what rituals are important to us are being argued in the conservative movement and reform movement. People from my generation in the 40s, as they come back into the religion, are asking themselves, am I going to do the same exact stuff my parents did? Or is my practice going to be different, more modernized? Or am I going to go back to something that my parents would have never done? So these things, you can really argue about them, to the wearing of kippah, who's going to be able to be married and bar and bat mitzvah at the synagogue. There's a lot of questions that will really determine whether somebody wants to stay with their religion.
Well, Stephen Fried, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Stephen Fried is the author of The New Rabbi, A Congregation Searches for Its Leader.